Yeah.
If I can do it, then you can too. All team together and we'll make it through. I've been going solo for all too long, and it's time to move on. ADHDers, 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 ADHDers.
Oh. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to ADHD Explorers. I'm your host, Addie. And we got my co-host Ben here. And today we have the fabulous Oniazi. She is a lifestyle blogger, a mom to two, a traveler, and a physician's assistant. Is that right? Oni,
yes,
tell us a bit assistant. About yourself.
Yeah, okay. Well, so I'm Oniazi. Hey, everybody. I have been a content creator for over a decade now. Started off as a mommy blogger. When my kids were very, very tiny, just like born. And I've actually been practicing medicine as a psychiatric physician assistant for years. And my story is a bit complicated because, of course, I practiced medicine as a PA, but I didn't discover that I had ADHD until after I had been practicing medicine and realized that I was checking more boxes than I thought, you know, I should be. And so it's been a wild ride since then of initially some confusion, shame, and then acceptance and just like pride, essentially, because it's something that I want to pass on to my children to have pride about themselves no matter their diagnosis. So, yeah.
That's so nice to hear. I think that a lot of people who get late diagnosed also, like, I know that I went through that wall of shame. Or like, I was like crying of happiness. I was like, oh, everything makes sense now.
Yeah.
Did you feel like something like that?
I actually did. It felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. It felt like I finally knew where I belonged. It felt like everyone that had loved me, despite of not understanding what was going on, I just appreciated them even more. Because I felt that I was lost and now I'm finding myself. And so it was like the beginning of a whole new journey. So I did have a lot of that at first. But then also because I was late diagnosed, I was already a mom. And so I was dealing with a lot of mom guilt on top of the guilt of having, you know, a late diagnosis of ADHD. So really, you know, to be honest, my own child's neurodiversity led me to also realize that there was something that I need to investigate about myself.
Wow. So how long has it been now since you've known?
Oh, in 2020. So 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I think there were quite a few.
Were you able to get like a kickstart into the diagnosis process just because you're already in the medical field?
Oh, of course. I did. And you would think that it would have helped in like managing it. But not at all, because I've actually gone through almost every medication. I mean, there's probably some forms of the medication that I have not tried, definitely. But I've gone through so many and has still not found something that works well for me. Like, I've personally struggled with so many different side effects that I'm like, oh, no, I'd rather just go without. You know, part of me is like, okay, I've been managing without, but at the same time, it's such a struggle. So I have to incorporate a lot of things outside of medication, which is ironic. So,
yeah, that is so, such a journey, like trying all these different things. And I know for me, like, it was like all those stimulant ones, they were very like made me throw wobblies. Like, I would get really emotional. So yeah, finding what works for you is such a journey, isn't it?
Yes, it's such a journey. And it was like a struggle, like, you know, working with my colleague on like, okay, I feel like I was the worst patient, honestly, because it's like after trying and, you know, increasing and decreasing and trying all these different things, I'm like, no, can we try something else? You know, constantly asking for something else because I'm fully aware of what's out there. So it's like I ended up being the worst patient, I feel like. And after, I think it was like a year and a half of trying medication, I was like, okay, let me just chill for now. Let me chill for now.
Yeah.
But I guess at least having that inside knowledge, you're able to advocate for yourself more. Whereas I think a lot of people like don't know how to advocate for themselves in the against medical professionals, right? They're just like, oh, they told me this, it must be true.
Exactly. And it makes me feel like I'm grateful that I have this knowledge and access, but then it makes me feel terrible because I know the struggle, especially here in the US. You can have like so much stigma with, you know, seeking diagnosis on its own, let alone the treatment of it. It's like impossible in some ways. It's a struggle to find providers that will even, you know, give you the stimulant that you need. Out of, you know, I understand both sides, essentially. I understand both sides. So it's a struggle for all.
Do you think, like having worked in the medical field for a little while, have you seen a change in the in like the awareness of things like ADHD and autism in the community?
Oh my goodness. I mean, yes, I'm really just shocked when I'm speaking for myself, and at the same time seeing the awareness come when I was, you know, becoming aware of my ADHD and the ADHD in my entire family and the autism in my family, like seeing the world become more fully aware, because it was something, especially autism, that I had no idea about growing up, because at least culturally, everyone kept children that were, you know, not easily, you know, manageable in public away and out of sight. And so I didn't know how to navigate that world, and especially as, you know, a mom of a child who's newly diagnosed, whether it's ADHD or autism, I'm like, there is no, you know, handbook, but there's also no example for me to follow at the time. So it was just figuring it out. Very steep.
Even like I've autistic spectrum ADHD, or DHD as we call it, and the journey of understanding my freaking brain was so, it's so long and so hard.
Still continuous.
I'm still working on it, even though I've like 3 years ago now. So the fact that you're a parent on top of it and a nurse, it's huge respect. Like, so how, I'm really curious now, like how that journey has been for you on your journey of like managing your ADHD while also like thriving in your own way. How have you helped those like align?
So I love that I kind of got to a point in college where I no longer cared what anybody else thought about me. And sorry, I have a cough drop in my mouth since I have a cough. But I came to a point where I stopped caring what people thought about me. And I don't know if it was like PDA or whatnot. I was just like, you know what? I don't care. And so I'm going to do what makes me happy, what makes me comfortable. And I really leaned into that. And so, you know, having the diagnosis and then also having these children with the diagnoses, I wanted to be an example of them. So it's like, hey, I'm going to accept myself in all of my intricacies so that they will know how to love and accept themselves. And so it's been, I will say, for me, a little bit easier than some, because I've heard so many stories from close friends, family, followers who struggle with a diagnosis and feel that kind of guilt and shame and just a moment, I'm gonna drink some water. Thank you. But they struggle with the guilt and shame and trying to figure out where to go next, but also how will their future look, because they've struggled with this all their life and they're like, do I blame where I am in life now because of it? Can I get to where I want to go? How do I manage, you know, motherhood? Because it's, motherhood has a lot of moving parts to it without the diagnosis. And then when you struggle to just follow through, when you struggle to figure out the next step and someone is counting on you, like deeply, like life-wise, it becomes even more daunting, I feel. And so to be able to like take that deep breath and know that your best is good enough is important, but it's not as widespread or accepted, because we are just, you know, especially online, a community of, we love things to look aesthetically pleasing, but behind my laptop is a hot mess. You know, I may create these videos with, no, seriously. I may create these videos and these pictures that our house looks amazing, but literally I have to count on my cleaners to come every week to help me even just jumpstart the cleaning process. I need an assistant to help me just take my laundry and put it where it needs to be after it's clean, because I struggle with starting so many different things. It's like if I don't find pleasure in something or it's not new, I already know and understand it. It's hard for me to start. And in a way, it's like if it was just me, I could deal with it. But because I'm in a home with other people that need to, you know, create a structure, I try my best, but I've been able to accept where I can just kind of hold my hand up and say, I can't do it. And I'm not ashamed to ask someone or hire someone to help me, because I'm, you know, grateful enough, you know, I'm grateful that I'm able to afford the help, you know, in these areas that I have struggled for a lifetime. So.
Yeah. And is your husband neurotypical, or is he also?
No, not at all.
No.
No. He's got it all. Yes, very neurospicy.
We attract each other. It makes sense.
No, honestly, because it's like, how did that happen? How did we, like, we both had no idea. We got together and it just, now that we both know late for everything, we both know, it's become a whole new journey. And I feel like initially, or at least during that like 7-year slump, it made a huge struggle in our marriage. Like we were at wit's end, but because we both learned to love each other with, you know, with what was going on, we learned to accept the person for who they are and to continue to learn them, because it's like, we're both like learning who we are over time. So we're not the same person that we got with, you know, and that's okay, because people will learn and grow and stretch and, you know, become different people over time and life experiences. And so we really can lean on each other now. We can really like, you know, hey, I'm struggling here. I need support there. We know not to take offense in certain things, because you know, or you better understand that person and what their personal struggles are. So, you know, it can definitely hurt a relationship. Like just a moment.
Both suffering from rejection sensitivity. That's been something in my relationship where you like set each other off by accident and then you're both like,
yes, exactly.
The hormones.
We even sought out a counselor that was familiar with neurodiverse couples specifically. Oh, and she actually helped the best for us. We were just like, we need someone who gets it. And
What are some ways you mentioned, like, 7-year slump, and there's also kind of like the, I don't know, like the 3-year boredom of like ADHD relationships where you're like, oh, I've known you and now I know everything about you and I'm bored and I want the next thing. How have you guys moved past that, and how do you continue to keep things like interesting so that you don't get bored of your relationship?
Fortunately for me, because of my ADHD, I don't get bored. I'm constantly looking for new things and trying to do new things and trying to convince him into new things. And for him, he's like the type of guy that he wants things to just be the same and to just be predictable. And I'm the opposite. And he's like, we've learned to kind of to allow each other to bend instead of break. Because before it would be like a hard stop, no, you know, once I would say something like that. And so, you know, me, it's like, wait, you're bursting my bubble, and no, I've got to fly. But now he knows, okay, let me be flexible. Like he's the string to my balloon. And he knows that if he's like allowing me to kind of float, then I'll come back down to reason. Just flow with me a little bit initially. And so, and then for me, I better understand why I'm doing that, why I constantly am looking for something new and exciting and having all these great, or at least for me, are great ideas. But then, you know, then I take a little bit more time before I say it to him. Because I just, you know, whatever's on my head just comes out immediately. It's like, okay, let me take some time. Yeah, I take a little more time. I think about it a little bit. I process a little bit more. Or at least when he responds, because he's not responding so harsh as before, I'm able to kind of like, okay, think about what he would really want. And is this really going to work overall? Is this realistic, you know, and then come back to reason. So we've learned in this year and a half span since everything was, you know, like that to really work with each other.
I love that metaphor of like he's my string, because you know you still get to go off and float around and like do your thing, but then being grounded for people who like us, who are very like, we kind of need that grounding sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
I love how you said I gotta fly. The way you said it too, because you meant it, and I was like, wow, I respect.
Yeah,
like that's how I want to feel when I wake up in the morning. Hey baby, yeah. I gotta fly.
We
will never be caged.
Yes. That's why we
I guess that takes us pretty naturally into flying and traveling. Tell us about that experience. Like, you've traveled with your two young kids, right? Yes. How?
Wow. I felt like, because that was not an example I knew beforehand. It was really just, I felt like I wanted to see the world and I didn't want to stop because I had children. I wanted them to experience the world in a way I hadn't. So I was just adamant about, let's go. If kids live there, we can make it work. We can bring them along. So it was honestly wonderful. What's funny is that I've learned that I want to travel often and my partner may not want to travel as much as I do. And that's okay. So that's why I often may go on a solo trip, a girls trip. We do still travel together and have the same amount of fun, but it's like it took us really accepting each other to be like, okay, I may not travel as much with him or the kids together as, you know, in my brain I may have wanted to initially. So I'm still traveling with them, and we have a huge, like, almost month-long trip coming up in a few weeks with the whole family, so that's going to be wild because we've never been gone that long together. So I feel like it's a new dynamic as my kids have grown into themselves, especially with their ADHD and their autism. And I feel like it's going to be a new way to navigate things because, you know, they're picky eaters.
And it's one thing when you have like a little baby that you can just like strap to you and carry around. Exactly. But now, how old are they? Like...
Yeah, they are 6 and 7. And so they
running around
their own space, constant. They're constantly going. And so I'm excited to like continue the life of traveling with them. Like, we have so many plans. We plan on even taking like a sabbatical 6 months to a year where we just travel the world together. And so we're planning, like, you know, laying the foundation for that now so that we can do that in about 5 years once they hit like middle school age. So yeah, got a lot of travel plans.
It's almost like, I love in a few things you've said, you talked about like acceptance of your partner, acceptance of yourself, acceptance of your own children. I feel like what you're doing is like you're almost leading them to the edge of their like comfort zone and being like, hey, it's quite nice over here. And I think that as a kind of intention to have, like expanding this area of comfort in all those ways, that must be really helpful, especially like in a different country. You've got so many different things going on, new languages, new food. How do you think they'll react to such a different influence?
So the way that we've been raising them, they are excited actually for the new things. They acclimate so easily to changes and new things, which is not, you know, typical for some, or for some kids that may have neurodiversity. So I'm grateful for what I've exposed them to. Like, every time we're about to travel to another country, I have them work on that language beforehand. So if we go to, you know, where did we go? But my son was learning Portuguese, but right now he's learning Igbo since we're going to Nigeria. And so he's been working on that. And then every time, you know, so they get more comfortable with the language. It's just the food. They're particular. They're so particular. So I have to literally pack their comfort safe foods, like a whole suitcase of it, anytime we travel. But they gradually learn and, you know, we'll go ahead and eat other things. But you really just want to have that safe food just in case. Because it's like, sometimes you don't want to fight. You don't want to fight sometimes.
Sometimes it's like that comforting, that external comforting really helps. Like, even when I take my wife, she's from the US. And when I take her around, she doesn't feel calm sometimes unless she can get a McDonald's. Because it reminds her of home. So and all it takes is a little cheeseburger and she's fine. She's like, oh, the world's fine again.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
So that's nice that you pack little goodies to them. Oh, that's really yes. nice. Oh, wow. So I wanna know a bit more about like how you kind of learned to manage your own passions at the same time. Like, do you have a system for managing like your content creation?
Oh gosh, I think I mentioned before that. Is it what?
Is it a beautiful mess, as we like
to it's absolutely a beautiful mess. One thing that I often say to people is I don't like to make plans or goals. I just vibe and go where like God takes me. Yes. And so because when I hyper focus, then I'm like, oh, this is what I need to accomplish, and I just go all in and head down and achieve. It's like I've loved that about me because I've been able to achieve so much in my lifetime. So I'm like, why do I got to start, you know, putting a label or a goal on things now? I'm just going to decide and then go and then wherever things shift, because, you know, getting into PA school was so hard, but I decided it and it happened. You know, becoming a content creator, that was by happenstance. My husband saw that I was getting into postpartum depression and suggested, hey, you know, why don't you get back into blogging? You were doing that when we were first engaged, and I saw that it, you know, gave you just some happiness and peace. So I went into blogging just to therapeutically like share my struggles as a mom. And because through the journey, I saw that, oh, people make this a job and people are doing it for work. Okay, let me try that out. And so I just hyper-focused, and it's like, oh, we are now like 12 years later and it's like my career. So it's just, it's crazy. I just kind of go where life takes me, the beautiful mess, essentially.
So I love that, because when you're doing your passions, right, I'm also in that kind of mindset where I don't like to make plans, you know. And so how do you communicate with that with friends? Like, sorry, I'm just hyper focusing on my passions right now. But actually, like, I never know how to say it.
I literally this morning was thinking about, I'm grateful for the friends that I have, like, since college, because they knew me before I achieved so much, and they loved me despite my mess. Like, I didn't know what was going on with me. I was just, like, figuring life out. I was always angry, yelling, just, like, I was always dysregulated, constantly. But they saw past that. These girls saw past that, past whatever trauma that was causing it, whatever drama I was bringing, and they told me about myself. They loved me through the hard times and just like hugged me physically and spiritually, whether I was close or away, because, you know, I traveled for so many different things. I moved to different sides of the country for different things. And through all that, they have been a constant. I actually just posted like a video that we had a girls trip. And I'm like, I'm so grateful for this friendship. So I'm saying that all to say, I never had to say anything. They didn't know necessarily what I was going through, but I've never had to explain myself. And over time, they've learned me. Over time, they've seen. Yeah. And so it's like, I think it is helpful if you know that, okay, I struggle with ADHD. Because oftentimes when I meet someone new, especially if they're working for me, I tell them up front, I'm not organized. I have severe ADHD. And I just need you to know that up front, because I'm going to rely on you for this, or I need you to just remind me of that, things like that. But they, without understanding what I was going through, they were there for me and with me. But anyone new to me, especially if they're close enough to me that, you know, something may kind of interfere, I let them know straight up, hey, I've got ADHD. And so
that's awesome.
Expect this, or, you know.
Yeah, to communicate it up front. It's like, it's such a badass move. And it's good. It's cool that you have the confidence to say that. Like, that's the way.
Yeah.
I like to ask a lot of our guests sometimes, like, and you kind of shared a little bit about this, about your journey with I'm not sure what you called the school, but was it med school you went through?
So PA schools, yeah, psychiatric, or sorry, not psychiatric, physician assistant, now physician associate. We've changed the name.
So I like to ask people, like, what's something hard that you've gone through that you've conquered?
Oh, man. So one of those things I keep mentioning that, oh, I went for it, even though it was so hard getting into my sorority. In college, I was like, I had no affiliation, like, legacy-wise, didn't have, like, a close friend in it. I just set my mind on it and achieved it, and it was, like, you know, a hard thing to get to and through. Becoming a PA is so difficult to get into a program, but also you have to, like, have work experience with a PA and all kinds of stuff, and I was, like, so focused, and I made it happen. Becoming a psychiatric PA, that's barely even heard of. Usually those jobs even go to NPs, but I decided that's what I wanted to do. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hyper-focus and do it. And I honestly negotiated my way into it. Like, I created the job. There was no job. I created the job for myself. So it was like, you know, and so I'm just, yeah.
You created the job. Oh, I love that. I do think that the creativity that is seen in so many ADHDers is actually like something that can never be underestimated. Like the fact that, you know, the normal way is like taught to us through generations, you know, this is how we do it, follow the way. And then you get these ADHDers who are like sending videos directly to employers and being like, is that what you did?
Exactly. Exactly. Because in my mind, I love it. Yeah, in my mind, there's always a solution to every problem. So it's like, if you want this, there's a way. Just figure it out. Mm-hmm. So, there's got to get creative.
What was it about that kind of work that you were so passionate about pursuing it?
So before, as just PA in general, it definitely was my ADHD before I knew it. Because I was trying to figure out, what schooling do I want to go to? Do I apply to pharmacy school? Become a, you know, a physician. And then I came up randomly during my research online what a physician assistant was. And I saw that you could literally work in any specialty that you want to. You don't have to specialize. And I was like, I never want to do the same thing forever. This is for me. I can change whenever, you know. And so I've literally, as a PA, I've worked in orthopedic surgery, pediatric emergency medicine, urgent care, pain medicine. And now psychiatry has been the longest, and I plan on staying with it. Like, I could probably do it forever. Like, I found my niche, but the reason I became a PA is because I never wanted to just niche down and just do one thing forever. So, yeah.
Like, how is a PA different to, like, say, a nurse or a doctor? Like, where do you fit in the medical world?
If we're going to make it like a simple reference, it's like in between where we see patients like a doctor. And we prescribe medication like a doctor, but we're not allowed to have our own like practice, or we have to have our name sign along, you know, or not name, but a doctor has to co-sign anything really big or important. Like a stimulant, a doctor would have to co-sign it. Any other medication that's not like in that class, you know, it's whatever. So really, physician assistants were created, I believe, in the 1960s by the medical board. And so it's under, you know, the doctor's orders. And I don't know if you've heard of an NP or a nurse practitioner. It's the same thing, a PA and a nurse practitioner. It's just nurse practitioner was created under the nursing board. So they just operate separately, but are the same thing, the same role.
Okay. Do you feel that makes sense.
Being involved in psychiatry has helped you understand your mind?
Oh, absolutely. It's the reason why I truly understood what was going on with me. It took me, several years of practicing to finally figure it out, but it's helped a lot in understanding who I was, where I was going, and then also for my children, and to really know that there was hope, even if medication is not necessarily working for me now. I knew that there is hope with ADHD. There is a way, you know, to manage it outside of medication. But really, I'm just grateful that I was, I guess, destined to practice psychiatry, because I don't know if I ever would have figured it out, or at least not at that time, without going into the area.
being in that world.
Yeah.
I do feel like a lot of ADHDers, when they first get diagnosed, it is a bit overwhelming sometimes because you want to know, like, okay, what practically do I do right now to move forward?
Yeah.
But, like, no one has ever shown us that. And there's no, like, well, we make guides, but like there's no like practical guides being like, okay, how about, okay, we learn to regulate the nervous system. We learn to like see if meds work for us. You know, we try all these things. And so I really understand that struggle.
Yeah.
Someone actually, one of our community members was asking about like, how do you manage your ADHD without medication? They said, I don't want to become dependent on it. I think if it's working for you, like being quote dependent on it isn't necessarily the worst thing.
Yeah. No, I totally understand because I often have patients say that out of fear, they don't want to try the medication because they don't want to become dependent. But I feel like if you already have that mindset, it's less likely that that's even going to happen. As long as you're using it in a way that it's prescribed and being intentional about it, taking breaks, really dependency, I don't think would be, or even abuse would be what we would be worried about. But consistent long-term use can cause, you know, for someone to need a higher dose to get the same effectiveness over time. So that's something you could work with a provider with. But I don't think that people should be afraid of trying it because you can always stop it. But if you have the intention of seeking something else, seeking a certain feeling, abusing in any other way, then yeah, especially if you have a history or are prone to anything like that, then it might be an alternative that you want to look for.
Yeah, like it's cool that so you're pretty familiar, I guess, with all the different kind of meds, which is quite. Mm-hmm. Quite an informed opinion, which is quite nice to have on the show. I think Addie is like dropped out, her internet's a bit dodgy, so I'll just from here. So I really, you were talking about and I feel like this is an important topic to talk about, and let me know if you don't want to talk about it, but I feel like when we first get diagnosed, there is so much cultural guilt and shame, one, and then there's guilt and shame we have of our own lives. And all the ways that, like, history has, like, you know, maybe we failed, we didn't bring in homework, or like, we didn't feel like we could focus on homework, and then we were ashamed for that.
Yeah.
How, is there, do you have any way that you manage these kind of emotions to digest them?
I let myself feel them for a brief moment. I don't let myself feel those type of emotions for too long. So being intentional about, okay, I can feel this way, but I can't stay in it, because that's when I am going to be stopped in my tracks.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, either get out of bed, or I can't do that next step, or even take care of me, you know, because I'm focused on that feeling and, you know, wallowing in it. So I feel, for me, I allow myself to feel guilty, like, oh, you know, but then I push really hard past it, no matter what may be going on, because sometimes you affect other people when you do that, when you do have those feelings.
For sure.
And it's unfortunate, but for you to be able to continue to live life, because it's not, unfortunately, it's not going to be the last time. So it's like, do we stop everything because of this, you know, emotion that's gonna happen? But for me, it's important to give myself grace, because I know it wasn't intentional. I know I'm trying my hardest, and I know I get frustrated with myself, but then I know that it's gonna be a brighter day, a brighter moment. And lucky for me, with my ADHD, my attention span is short, so I've already forgotten that.
I lean heavy in it.
I see that you pushing off with a strong leg of love, self-love, self-care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you were like, oh, like, that's such a loving tone. And I was like, oh, that's so nice how she talks to herself.
I think that's
so important. Just because I do see a lot of our community get triggered into freeze in their nervous system from experiencing guilt and shame. I know it's something that we have a big issue in our community. And I think that talking about how to manage that is a really important thing. Because because I do think we can get stuck in it like an emotional trance. And sometimes it's like days long and you're like, well, I've been like lying on the floor for a while. So it's almost like out of self-love, you're saying to yourself, hey, like, let's feel this for a bit and then we're going to move on.
Yes, exactly. Like, I'll even look at the clock and give myself some time. Like, okay, you have till 11:30 to still feel this way or zone out or, you know, doom scroll for like 30 more minutes and then it's the next step.
Wow. That's cool that you give yourself a time limit.
Yes.
Or like, you give yourself the time to just, okay, I'm going to feel this for this time.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. Good work.
Oh, thank you.
So, Addy, do you want to share some questions from the community?
Yeah, let's get into it. Kind of related to your medical field stuff, someone was asking, can you talk about the relationship between drug use / addiction in people with ADHD? Is that something that you have much knowledge in or have seen?
So... I won't say that I have like a big familiarity outside of screening for it, because a lot of things people may use for negative, I like to phrase it as negative coping skills, because I feel like we always need something to cope, but trying to be very intentional about it being positive, although it may not seem like positive for some people. For me, scrolling social media is my coping skill. Some people may eat. Some people are just essentially looking for that feeling to escape, you know. So I escape into social media. But really, when you are using a stimulant to escape, you're likely going to use more than was intended to get that feeling. And so it comes down to if you have that personality that can be, whether it be addictive or, you know, it's hard for you to let go of a certain feeling or a certain desire, craving, then it's important to steer clear of any kind of controlled medication. It's not as easy as just saying it. That's why it's important to have a treatment plan and have a provider that you can work with. But I don't think that the general public should be afraid of stimulants, so that, you know, in case that they become addicted, you have to really be seeking that feeling, that escape, for that to be the cause. And so if you think that that's a possibility, you definitely want to start with therapy first and work your way around, because there are definitely non-controlled options that can be used, but then also mindfulness and intentionality to try to manage the symptoms away from using a stimulant.
Do you think people that are inclined towards like substance use issues, alcoholism, things like that, do you think there is benefit to them with being on medication as a way, as something that's like, because they're probably self-medicating a lot of the time, right?
Yes, that is true. That is true. It's a sticky situation and a slippery slope when it comes to that, because I see what you mean, and I've seen that. But the danger of giving them the stimulant, oftentimes when you have the license, is greater than giving them the stimulant to see and hope that it will help long term, which is not always the case. It could just be another gateway to things. So really, with any patient that I have, if it comes to possible stimulant, I always screen and try non-stimulant options. And if it's like something like addiction, we manage that first. That's priority before treating the ADHD. So oftentimes when it comes to practicing psychiatry, you want to see what's the priority to treat first and then go in that order. So if we see something's well controlled, depending on the patient, maybe a stimulant might be the option down the road, but we really have to be careful and there has to be a lot of work done first.
How often do you see the overlap of people who are struggling with addiction
and
ADHD patients?
I won't say it's too often. It definitely I would say less than a fifth, if that, of my ADHD patients. Yeah, it's not necessarily a huge amount that, but granted, we have to think about the population, because it has to be a population that is able to afford treatment. So
yeah,
whether they have insurance,
the people who are not going to the doctor are probably
so it's like, do they have insurance, or are they able to afford the treatment anyway? So I'm just thinking about that overall. And then again, like, if someone started at a younger age, were they, you know, are they thinking about going seeking a provider for help with this, you know, or does it happen over time? And then, so it's just like, you really have to think about the actual demographic. So yeah, that's something to think about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some other things that people have been asking about. So, you talked a little bit about managing your ADHD without medication. Mm-hmm. So what are your main techniques? You said like mindfulness.
Yes. So definitely my self-love, because really a lot of how you allow yourself to feel, to push away from the RSD, to push away from ruminating of negative thoughts, is going to be important to allow you to create an environment where you can start. Because starting things, or even finishing the last 5% of things, is what I often struggle with and what I see a lot of people struggle with. So allowing, you know, creating the best environment for a healthy mindset is going to be important, whether it's therapy or whatnot. Because I'll say that a lot of this self-love also came through therapy. So I have definitely over time become more, you know, in this position to accept myself because of therapy. So therapy, mindfulness, I hire help for things that, you know, initially I would have been ashamed about, but now it's like, okay, no, I send my laundry out, because otherwise it would not get done. I have someone help me put it away, or it's going to stay in that corner forever. I have cleaners come, because it's just so hard to maintain the clean house. Although my kids are now a little bit older, so they are going to be doing their own job of cleaning up as much as possible. But really, so that I can, even though I may be disorganized, I thrive in order, essentially, when things are a little bit more.
We hate it and we love it at the same
time. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, okay, I've got to try my best. So I'm even still teaching myself, okay, always be doing something. In my head, that's what I tell myself, like, always be doing something, always be putting things away, always be, you know, reorganizing things. It feels like it's never ending and it's never going to finish, but try to keep doing it, even if you don't finish that task, because finishing a task from beginning to end is difficult. But giving yourself grace, even though, you know, you only move the needle halfway, at least it got moved. So yeah, essentially that's it for me. And then allowing my hyperfocus to be very, because everyone is different when it comes to their hyperfocuses. For me, I like achieving things. And so those things are like what I've hyperfocused on. But for some, they might hyperfocus on, like, you know, building a puzzle, or, you know, drawing, you know, the best picture. But lucky for me, it's trying to achieve things that, you know, I feel like someone's told me that I couldn't achieve. And so I keep going at it. And I think that was partly from my upbringing culturally, because my parents, I'm first generation Nigerian American. And so our parents were really strict on us to do the best and achieve. And sometimes in my head, I convince myself I do that in spite of them. Like, oh, they want me to be a doctor, I'm going to be a PA instead. You know, like, you know, just like trying to push what I think is against the grain. But it's really making myself happy to get to those things at the end of it. And so I know over time, like, I've reflected and saw, oh, I never even congratulated myself for making all that happen, because I was just like, okay, next goal, you know, not even a goal, like, next thing. But really, it's okay, because you're achieving either way. So just like being like, okay, you're doing a good job, you got this, you're getting there, keep going. I think it's motivating, self-motivating.
Do you have any kind of like a routine at all, or do you just go with the flow a lot of the time?
Great question.
Definitely, I will say 50% go with the flow. Other the other 50% is routine. That's helpful by being a parent because it forces me to wake up and get kids ready early. So because of that, I get up. Oh, another thing is I work out. excuse me. If I don't work out, the rest of the day is not as productive as it could have been, I feel. It helps me kind of wake up and get into that mindset to go get it, go get things done. Although, you know, I might get things halfway, 75% of the way done. I at least started. So the routine is definitely easier when I know there's crunch time because I definitely get things done because I know there's pressure, that time pressure of, okay, I got to get to this because I have to pick up the kids by 2:30. I got to get to that because, you know, I have this time that I have to do that. So really, that's why it's 50% mess, which causes me to go hard the other 50% because I now have a short amount of time to get things done.
Yeah. Is your work as a PA like scheduled or is it flexible?
And you yes, it's flexible as in I create my own hours, but yeah, so I put, okay, on a certain day, on Fridays, I'll see my patients and I get to like see them during this 5-hour block and just keep going. And so just, yeah, I do that every Friday. And so the structure of that is so helpful for me because I know that I'm not going to
have some regularity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little bit ago about creating a good environment for yourself to focus in. And you talked about, you know, you got the cleaner to make the space tidy. But are there other ways in which you'd like recommend how to optimize your environment, Brent?
Oh, okay. Water bottles everywhere. Definitely.
Oh, nice. Like a visual trigger.
Definitely. Yes, definitely water bottles everywhere because out of sight, out of mind. Like I think I went through a few years of dehydration because I didn't have water bottles. So, and if I don't see something, it's not going to get done. So water bottles for me.
That's such a good idea.
I'm all about efficiency. And okay, one thing for me, it's hard for me to get out of bed because I don't like the feeling of the cold floor. We don't have carpet. And so I have like house shoes everywhere so that I can have that comfort of the house shoe. And it can, for me, because I feel more comfortable, I'm more motivated to get up and do things instead of like, ugh, I want to, you know, get back to the couch because I don't like how it feels on the floor. So really like making things efficient for me is the biggest thing. Like I have trash cans like everywhere in my bathroom because I want to make sure the trash gets into the trash can. And I know if it's too far, I'm not going to, you know, it's just going to pile up and then I'm going to be like, ew, gross. And so it's like making things as efficient for me so that I can continue to be motivated is so important. Like for my kids, I want to, in the morning before they go to school, have them read lessons or do Spanish or whatnot. So I put in the dining room a little basket with all their books and pencils and things. And even though it just messes up the aesthetics, I need it there so that I can make sure that that gets
launch
done.
Pads.
So, yeah. So I make everything easy. Like I eat the same thing for breakfast every day, unless I feel like doing, like I have only two options, the one where my lazy breakfast or my, I have energy breakfast. And so like simplifying things, I think is the best thing so that I can put my energy and my hyper-focus into actual productive things. Like make the choices minimal as possible.
And if
I love that.
I think that's such a smart idea because I think that decision fatigue is so real with ADHD.
Yes, yes.
We get burned out from making any decisions. Yes. We don't want to waste our brain juice. So you make the decisions in advance.
Exactly, because you get distracted otherwise. If I want to eat something new, I'm going to start going to the store and find something else to do. And then it was like, oh, I was supposed to make breakfast. So yeah, just
and I love that you're like meeting yourself where you're at. You know, you said you're like, if I don't have trash cans, I'm just gonna make like little piles of trash everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, I never put I have a cast iron pan on the stove. I never put it away. Cast irons, you don't really wash them. You like rinse them and then like, and so it's just always on the stove, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like that extra step of having to like reach into the cupboard and pick up a pan, I'm like, well, it's there. I'm ready to cook.
I put a chopping board out all the time. It just lives on the counter. And when I wash it, I dry it on the counter where it lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's changed my life. No,
and you're like, this might not be the cleanest aesthetic countertops or tables, but like it works for me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is about what works for us at the end of the day. Like when we're managing our own life and making it slipstream like that. I wish I'm going to make everything like that. No decisions.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have a go-to point? No, you wouldn't wear, like, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't wear any different clothes. He just wears the same clothes every day. That's like taking it to the max. But we're fashionistas. Yeah, exactly. You know, we've got to have a varied wardrobe.
Yeah, it's harder when I love what is it called? Dopamine dressing? I like dopamine dressing. Like, give me a theme. I'm there for it.
I do think that there is something to be said about how you dress, especially when you're like doing your own hours, doing your own work. If I don't dress right for my work time, I am screwed. What is with that?
Oh, yes.
For sure. Exactly. If I stay in my pajamas, I'm it's a potato day. I am a full potato. Get my beanie, potato, put it on my head, and then that is me.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But do you ever, like, sometimes I forget to dress properly. I'm just wearing a robe, and I'm like, wow, why haven't I done anything today, like, at all? Oh, no, I forgot to get dressed. Damn you, morning.
Same.
I know some ADHDers keep their shoes on to, like, so they feel like they're, okay, I'm still doing stuff mode. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
House shoes.
Yeah.
That's why you have house shoes, because they are like, oh, I'm still doing stuff. Also, my, what is it? Physio told me I have to wear shoes all the time because of my bad arches or something. I don't know.
Wow.
So another question, I guess to kind of round things off, is back to parenting. Someone has asked, are there any recommended parenting techniques for mothers with ADHD to support their children's development?
Well, definitely conscious parenting, I think, is important, because what I realize, whether as me being a child or now having my own children, you don't want to respond or react from anger. You want to be intentional, because just like you, if you have ADHD, it's a high chance your child might have it too. And how they react and respond to things may not, you know, they just got here. They don't necessarily fully understand, or the way their mind works isn't like a fully developed prefrontal cortex. So giving them grace and really being intentional to, like, create those bonds with them, I think, is so important for yourself and for them. Whether it's healing you or allowing you to get comfortable to the point where you can tell your kid, okay, I'm a little overstimulated. I need some space. Because there's times, like, my kids know, okay, mommy needs a moment, leave her alone. And, you know, my son will kind of switch and be like, okay, mommy, why don't you go rest? Why don't you go sit down? If I tell him, I just
and then
need
that's
a
teaching them to advocate for themselves as well.
Yes, exactly. They're so good at advocating for themselves. Oh, I'm so sorry. They're so good at advocating for themselves. I'm just, like, so grateful to be able to change, you know, how I was raised in a way, which I don't necessarily blame my parents, first generation, and things were done the way they were done then. Being able to see that, recognize that, and not continue the cycle, I'm just so grateful to have that opportunity to at least try to build that relationship with my kids and to build that confidence, you know, within them, so that they can have that as they grow. Like, I told my son that he had ADHD. Like, I didn't hide it from him immediately. So he's like, at first he would, like, be at school and be like, oh, it's because I have ADHD. He would, like, use that as an excuse. And we're like, you can't use that as an excuse, but be aware, you know, so that any accommodation that's needed will be gotten. You know, anything that's a problem, like, so with both of my kids, it's like two different approaches, because my oldest with ADHD, he does not get medicated, does not need the medication, only because he's been thriving in school without it, makes all A's. And so we're, like, just watchfully waiting, but still have, you know, have him get accommodations in school, because we knew that, you know, he doesn't always pay attention to his fidgeting, so he can have his fidget toys and things like that. My other son, literally, ADHD medication stimulus changed his life this semester. And it was, I won't say it was our fault. He was, like, so young that we were not ready to put him on. We felt like we weren't ready and we were scared. I don't know. Actually, I wasn't scared. My husband was scared. But when he got the right medication, it changed his life. It changed our lives. He is able to be in a general education classroom sit through and finish his work and learn in ways we couldn't have imagined before. And, you know, it makes us just so grateful that we were so open to talk about things and to figure things out together. Because, you know, at times parents are hesitant to start their kids on medication. I think the biggest thing I would want your audience to know is, like, if your child needs the medication, be open to try. You know, it's not going to change your child. They're not going to be a whole different person, but it can make the world a little bit easier. So I'm grateful for that. And, you know, they've got two different approaches. Like I said, one child doesn't get medication. He has ADHD. The other one, he needed it. And we're just so grateful for it.
Yeah. I think it goes back to, it's the same thing you're doing with yourself. You're like meeting them where they're at and doing what each individual, like everyone in your family is so different. You said, you know, your husband has like the ways he wants to do things, your kids, and you're just like meeting everyone where they're at. And like, there is something to that. It's so beautiful.
You've shared so many golden gems with us through living a life where you're kind of, I love that your bravery in terms of facing difficulties in your life. And I think that sometimes, like, we ADHDs, we want to hide because we don't want to accept any more on our plate. You've had this bravery to manage you, your partner, your children. And I really commend you for that. And I think we should celebrate. I think we should celebrate all our wins. So that's like my new, like, my new thing on life.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. I used to never. But now I'm going to try.
Yeah, because we're taught like modesty, you know, like, oh, you have to just like, like, you know, brush it off. And it's like, or humility, whatever, you know, and it's like, nah, actually, I'm awesome. I brushed my teeth today.
Exactly. Like, I got up and I got ready. That was an accomplishment. Like, seriously. Did I?
Oh, wow. Well, where can people find you and follow your journey?
Everyone can follow my and my family's journey at Sincerely ONYI on all social media platforms.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Oni. It was,
thank you.
Yeah, great to have you on. You're so lovely.
Thank you.
And yeah, everyone listening, thank you for being here. We love you guys so much. We're just out here trying to build this big community of ADHDers, supporting other ADHDers. And if you need some resources, you can check out ADHDers.com. We've got our workbooks there. We've got Pay What You Can. We've got a Discord community. You can come and chat to peeps. It's real fun. And if you want, if this episode has been good for you, share it with some people, leave a review, rate us. We love to hear from you. Thanks so much.
Cool.
Bye.
Keep looking after yourselves. Lots of love. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.